Shannon Pratt now on Sports Time is national college football writer for CBS Sports, Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who you can find on Twitter X at David W. Cobb. It's David Cobb.
David Cobb joins us now on our Sissy's Log Cabin guest line to talk some college basketball and college football. David, I've got to start with the news for the Arkansas Razorback. John Calipari picked up another commitment today from Adu Thierro, his big man that was with him at Kentucky following him to Arkansas. What have you made of what John Calipari has done over these last couple of weeks as he really starts to solidify what his first roster will look like at Arkansas?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is John L. Davis out of Florida Atlantic. He was the co-AAC Player of the Year, big part of their Final Four run in 2023. So that's the one, to me, that helps Arkansas stand apart, maybe just a touch from what Kentucky has done. Because Kentucky's gotten some good players, too. And, of course, we're going to compare Kentucky and Arkansas for obvious reasons. Thierro is a nice complimentary addition, though. I mean, he is a player with a lot of upside. Still pretty raw, though. And I'm a little surprised to see him going to Arkansas because he sometimes struggled to carve out a major role with Calipari at Kentucky. So the fact that Cal was able to get him to come to Arkansas it probably means he envisions Adu Thierro playing a significant amount of minutes for him next season. And I don't think that's a bad thing because though you don't see his statistics jump off the page, he's a really good defender, really good rebounder, brings a lot of athleticism to the wing, and he can be anything from a two to a four. And if that guy ever starts hitting three-pointers, then watch out. You'll see his name on NBA mock draft. So that's kind of, I guess, the lay of the land on Adu Thierro. But Arkansas still got a couple of spots to fill. But getting him is a good one because he's got a lot of upside and a couple of years left to still figure it out.
David, I say it a little bit here locally that we're doing it again with the hype for next year. We're a 1 month today. I think that's right. I think we're 1 month today removed from UConn cutting down the nets. That is no Wednesday. We're still not even a month. We're still not even a month, and we already have some here talking Tigers second weekend along those lines. We have a lot around here with the John Calipari news, and it's kind of a force of his nature of, you know, here goes Cal again. To what? To a first-round exit?
Yeah, it's easy to get carried away in the hype of the portal season because you get five or six talented players and you let your imagination run wild. Meanwhile, there's teams around the country who are returning almost everything from high-caliber squads. I mean, look at what Marquette's going to bring back. Yeah, they lose Tyler Kolek, but Cam Jones is ready to be an All-American out of the city of Memphis, played at ECS, right? So you look at Creighton, they're going to bring back Ryan Cockbrenner and Steven Ashworth and Mason Miller out of the city of Memphis, another kid with a lot of experience now under his belt. And so it's easy to get swept away when you add six or seven transfers because you forget that there's a whole lot of other really good teams out there that didn't have to add six or seven transfers, and you hadn't heard anything about them because it's all the same players who were on their NCAA tournament team from a year ago. So that's, you know, that's the peril of this time of year. We know we did our transfer portal winners and losers, and I co-bylined that with my colleague Cameron Salerno, and I was on the fence. Do I put Memphis as a winner? I decided not to, but Cameron said we should. I said, all right, I'm open to that. I'm not opposed to that. But you got to realize Memphis is making these big portal additions because they have no other choice. And it's the same deal with Arkansas and with Kentucky. And the thing that makes Memphis different from those teams is that they are not undergoing a coaching change. So it shouldn't necessarily be by necessity that they've got to reload their roster. But Penny's gone. He's shifted from having a more freshman-oriented team to having a more transfer-heavy team. And they haven't been able to, build this thing to a point where they're bringing three, four, five, six scholarship players back every season. So, yeah, I mean, Memphis has done well without a doubt, but it's because they had to. There was no choice. They had to go get a P.J. Haggerty and a Tyrese Hunter and some of these other players. So I'm not ready to say Memphis is a loser by any stretch, but I was kind of iffy on, you know, whether or not we should declare them a winner. But you know, they've at least certainly got the pieces that they need to be the preseason favorite in the AAC.
Sure. Well, I'm curious, speaking of the Tigers, and I'm sure multiple things to get to with the Tigers, but David Jones is certainly a big piece. I think anybody looking at this Memphis team going into next year, a lot kind of hangs on what happens with him. If David Jones is back, I think it's a completely different outlook on this team than if he's not with this team next year. Now, he did not enter his name into the transfer portal, but he was one of, what, the 78 players invited to the NBA Combine next week. How should Memphis fans feel about that? Because I think, I don't know if I expected him to be invited to the actual Combine. I thought certainly you'd probably get invited to the G League Combine that's happening before the actual NBA Combine, but I didn't know if his name would be on that list. Should Memphis fans be a little worried that his name was on that, or should they still feel good or positive about the likelihood of him returning to Memphis?
I don't envision David Jones becoming a first-round draft pick.
Right.
And at that point, let's say he could get a two-way contract. Well, nowadays, the NIL potential with what Memphis has in the bank and committed by Fred Smith, and I'm sure by some other businesses as well, they might be able to get themselves in a position to where they can offer David Jones something that is just as or more enticing than an NBA two-way contract. Because Memphis flies charter. When you play in the G League, you don't fly charter.
Sure.
You fly commercial. You play in front of 500 fans if you're lucky.
A lonely existence. Play,
yeah.
It is. And if you can make the same amount of money playing inside FedEx Forum, playing college basketball, playing in really, you know, Memphis is going to have a great non-conference schedule again. Memphis is going to try to get to the NCAA tournament. They should have a decent chance to do that. So I think there's a lot that's attractive about college basketball now. And David Jones is one of those guys where 6-7 years ago, yeah, you know what, he probably would have gone. You could be a second-round pick. You can get a two-way contract. Yeah, you know, okay, time to go. Nowadays, maybe you can make $800K or something if you stay at Memphis. And I don't know the exact, you know, dollars on what he would be looking at if he comes back, but I guarantee you it would be competitive with an NBA two-way contract. And unless he just goes to the Combine and lights it up, I kind of think we're talking about David Jones in that undrafted free agent, late second round, two-way contract type of range.
It's just a lot of banners wanting to be hung in May.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of the offseason. It's hope. It's optimism. It's hype. It's a chance to believe that the next season is going to be the one. And that's not unique to Memphis. That is college basketball and college football across the country. You used to get excited about your high school recruiting class, and that used to be the source of hope, and now it's your portal class. That's just kind of the way it is. And, you know, so we'll see. If they get him back, then, yeah, let's talk about Memphis in more significant terms. Let's have that conversation about if next year can be the second weekend breakthrough. But without David Jones...
How about a bid?
I mean, without David Jones, I think that's kind of what you're hoping for, is a team that can pull it together, figure it out, and make the NCAA tournament. With David Jones, I think your expectations are maybe a little higher than that.
How about better than a five seed at Dickey's Arena?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Look at the AAC and everything the AAC has lost. Top of the charts right now in terms of the amount of minutes and production lost to the portal. Out of 32 conferences in college basketball, nobody lost more to the portal than the AAC.
Crazy.
So, I mean, and Memphis is a big part of that. Now, Memphis is able to get better players in because of the NIL and the prestige of the program, because of the name of Penny Hardaway. They can get better players in from the portal than North Texas or Temple or Tulane, et cetera, et cetera. But then once you get it, you got to know what to do with it. So, I mean, I think that's ultimately kind of where I fall with Penny Hardaway. It's like, I don't doubt that he can collect talent. He's been doing that since the day he got on campus. But it's what you do with it that counts. And we haven't really seen a whole lot in terms of performance with the types of players that he's gotten.
I went through that whole list, Brian. You remember that day I went from Jeremiah Martin to Mike Park to every name. There's one constant, and that's Penny Hardaway. He's the common denominator through all those years of not much.
Yeah, without a doubt. So it's a big year for Penny. I mean, I feel like we've been saying that this time of year for the last few years, but you can't go 7 years without making the Sweet 16 at a place like Memphis. I mean, that's just that's just not acceptable. I don't think. I mean,
but yet the Tigers have not been to a Sweet 16 since 2009.
Right. That's tough. I mean, that's a long drought for a proud program, and it's a program that's had a lot of good players over that period of time. So, yeah, man, it's it's hard to paint a rosy picture for Memphis right now. But hey, look, at the end of the day, like, if people want to be excited about next year's team at this time of year, let them. I mean, that's the beauty of the offseason, the beauty of the portal.
Are we doing him any favors by doing that, though, by talking second weekend when you weren't even in the first weekend and you were on the first 17 out?
I take baby steps and appreciate some of the regular season stuff, too. I mean, you know, you just want to see a coherent, cohesive product again. And that was never the case this past season. I mean, the steadiest, most consistent, like, they've been was that year with Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams, when those two were leading the show, and you knew what you were going to get with those Tigers almost every time you turned the TV on. And that just hasn't been the case really for a whole lot of other teams in his era, because you've had these moving parts on the roster, and you've had, oh, is James Wiseman going to be eligible? Is he not? Right. You've had that stuff. And then you've had Naquan Tomlin's coming. Now what's that going to do to our rotation? Well, it turned out it kind of messed it up. And then he got a lot better as the season went on. But when you add somebody mid-year, what do you know? It messes things up.
Sure.
And so, no, they just need to get in a position where they have some consistency, not in May, June, and July necessarily, but in November and December and January. So that's, and they don't get the benefit of that foreign trip. They did their foreign trip last year, so they're going to have to, whoever can get to campus over the summer, they got to get there. They got to start, getting to know each other, getting comfortable playing with each other, be that pickup or whatever limited stuff they're able to do, NCAA sanctioned wise as a team, they need to do that, and get on the right path. But it's tough when you bring in a whole new roster. And aside from Nick Jordan, I mean, this is pretty much going to be a whole new roster.
Yeah. And I'm told foreign trips are really being kind of maybe devalued, tamped down a little bit, because any money laying around, it's got to go to NIL. No need spending outrageously on some foreign trip to Brazil.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when a team goes on a foreign trip and then they make a deep postseason run, it's like, wow, that foreign trip really set the tone for us. But then you have a team that went on a foreign trip and doesn't make the NCAA tournament, and you don't hear anything about it. So, I'm not saying those things can't be beneficial, but maybe overvalued a little bit. But I do think in this situation with Memphis, where you got a whole new team, a foreign trip might be good. Or, like, you guys remember when they used to do that sort of summer league exhibition stuff, where all the area college players, be they D1, D2, Rhodes, Christian Brothers, guys from other D1s who were home for the summer, they would get together. I think it was like the Bluff City League or something. And, even something like that could be beneficial, just to get them on the court, wearing the same uniform, playing a little together, getting a scouting report on each other. But it's just tough when you've got all of these new players, all of these new faces. And, Memphis is kind of in the same boat as a Kentucky or as an Arkansas or as a USC. These relatively high-level programs that are going to have completely new teams next season, and that can go really well or that can go really poorly. And, more often than not, I think history and the data tells us that it's the teams that have at least some core nucleus of players coming back that end up having the most success.
Yeah. Oh, well, David, you mentioned that you were a part of the winners and losers from college basketball's 2024 transfer portal cycle story that everyone should go and read on CBSSports.com. What was kind of like when you sat down, when they told you you're writing this, what was that kind of first, gotta be, this is the biggest winner of this cycle and the biggest loser? What were the kind of first ones that came to your mind that you were like, this has gotta be the first one we talk about?
Well, the easiest one was, unfortunately, Seton Hall as a loser. I mean, they won 25 games. They won the NIT. They took a big step forward in year two under Shaheen Holloway. But then they lost Kadarius Richmond to the portal. And then they lost DJ Davis to the portal. He's going to Ole Miss. And then they lost another couple as well. But Richmond, he's one of the top 10 guys in the portal. DJ Davis, I'd have to look, but I think I have him in the top 50 or 60 as well. Those guys were awesome. For a Seton Hall team that did beat UConn last season, a team that, if they had been able to keep it together roster-wise, would have gone into next year predicted as a fringe top 25 team and as a team to watch in the Big East. cost and all of that, and now they got to rebuild the thing almost from scratch. And now you look at that, and it's like, no wonder Shaheen Holloway's name came up in the mix for other jobs, because in the moment, that makes no sense. This is a former Seton Hall point guard who's having a good second season with his alma mater. Why would he be in the running for other jobs? Well, maybe it's because Seton Hall doesn't have the money that it needs to keep the top-level talent. That's the kind of thing that's going to frustrate a head coach, even one at their alma mater, and make them want to look elsewhere. So Seton Hall was an obvious loser, and then we can get into it if you want. But Kansas, for obvious reasons, they've got a lot of money, a lot of prestige, a long track record of success under Bill Self. They have cleaned up and done quite well for themselves after what was very much a down season for them.
Yeah. David, what about the college football? We just got through a portal. Who retained? Who didn't get hit that was scared they might get hit?
Well, I think a lot of the Group of Five teams have to feel pretty good, because there was all this buzz and all this talk about how the spring portal window was going to be pretty wild, and that we were going to see some really big name players, talented guys, jump in who were going to get that five-star transfer portal rating next to their name and be difference makers next season, and it was kind of a flop. I mean, you had Keandre Lambert-Smith go from Penn State to Auburn. That was a big one, but by and large, there wasn't any seismic quarterback movement in terms of somebody who you, oh, wow, that could be the starter at Michigan or something like that. You know, we didn't really see that. Whereas this time last year, you know, Peyton Thorne left Michigan State in the spring window and ended up being Auburn's starting quarterback last year. Graham Mertz, you know, left and ended up going from Wisconsin to Florida, and he ended up popping and playing pretty well. And so, you know, there wasn't that mass exodus of talent maybe from the Group of Five, I think, that some people anticipated. And that's not to say they haven't been hit in the portal. They have. But they at least made it through spring practice without having to completely recalibrate, you know, what they're actually going to look like come the fall.
Yeah. David, I don't know if we've talked to you about this yet, but it was voted on a couple weeks ago to allow the helmet communication devices in college football. Obviously, we're very used to it in the NFL, but it will be very new for college football. How does this look year one? Is it as smooth as I think people say it's going to be this year, or do people have trouble with it? What does year one of college football look like with the helmet communication devices?
Well, I think it's a big advantage for offenses and the offensive-minded head coaches. And there will be some kinks. But think about the pitch communication system that we see used in college baseball, where they've got it on their wristband or, you know, whatever it is, right? Like there's an electronic device being used to transmit pitch signals. And how often during the course of the game do we see the catcher go over to the dugout and have somebody fix it because it's not working right? Well, here's what's going to happen in college football this season. You're going to have clutch situations, big moments in the game where all of a sudden the tech goes out, and you know that it's an emergency, and you've got to have the old school like placards and third string quarterbacks over there doing dances and holding up signs and all that. You got to have that still in the backup, you know, just in case. But if you look in the NFL, they've got it down pretty well to where you don't have a whole lot of, you know, serious mishaps there. So, you know, how seamlessly can college football get that into place? Yeah, we'll see. A lot of it's going to depend on the Wi-Fi bandwidth in the press box and, you know, a lot of technical stuff that's kind of behind the scenes. But I guarantee you there's going to be moments in games, you know, with 130-plus stadiums in play in Division I across the country at the FBS level, where there are glitches and where things go wrong with this. But I think by and large, it's going to really help, going to help the offenses, because they'll be able to communicate directly, you know, from quarterback to coordinator or head coach to quarterback.
Yeah. We're talking to David Cobb. He joins us every single week from CBS Sports, talk college football and college basketball. I'm curious, David, last week The Athletic did a big story about Colorado football, and really the focus of it was we saw what happened with Deion Sanders when he first got to Colorado and kind of him going in, videoing everything. We saw, what was it, his first or second day there. We see the video of him talking to the returning players from Colorado and saying, you know, I'm bringing my bags and they're Louis. And so this was kind of getting, you know, the other side of the story from those players that transferred out of Colorado once Deion first got the job. And from there, people were taking quotes from that story, and it kind of blew up on social media. And then we had both Shador chiming in, and we also had Deion chiming in about the situation. What did you make of that story and that whole situation that got both Shador and Deion on social media talking about former players of Colorado?
Well, all they did was bring more attention to it by quote tweeting and talking about it and firing back. Shador and Deion collectively have a reach on social media that is exponentially greater than even The Athletic. And so The Athletic might have however many hundreds of thousands of followers it has between its main account and the writers who work for them. But Deion Sanders and Shador Sanders and Deion Sanders Jr., those guys collectively, when they tweet, people listen. They retweet. They quote tweet. They write articles about it. Well, the article was interesting, but it wasn't anything earth-shattering. It was like shocker. Some players who got run off in a pretty aggressive way by a head coach, which is not uncommon.
Right.
You know, they had some things to say about what had happened. And I don't think that any of it was just overly stunning or reflected, you know, just horrendously on Colorado. I don't think there was any real major news in that article. It was just sort of getting the perspective of those who had been run off by a really high-level, prominent college football coach. That's a very natural article for somebody in these sports
media. And it's a business now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know that anybody's out here, you know, saying that oh, this is Deion Sanders. Wow, he ran these players off. Wow, what a terrible guy, terrible coach. Like, you know, I think obviously he rubs some people the wrong way, and he's a little bit aggressive with some of his roster management tactics and techniques. But all he really did was bring more negative attention on himself by trying to strike back at what was just a pretty straightforward piece about some of the players who, you know, are no longer with that program.
And David, I readily admit that, you know, if it's me and my son, I don't know that I would really like the treatment and some of the rough and tumble that's going on. But you have to understand, industry-wide, we've really changed from, kind of recruiting mom and telling her how good her spaghetti is and showing them the trees and the flowers on campus. It's cash on a barrel head. It's a business. And if you don't like it, you can leave anytime you want.
Yep. Yeah, you can transfer as many times as you want to. Pretty soon we're going to have guys who are on one team in the fall semester in college basketball and then on another team in the spring semester. I mean, I'm not joking you. That day is coming, and it's coming sooner than we can wrap our minds around. And so, yeah I mean, it's been a business for a while. It's just more, over the...
We've torn the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I don't think that anybody's saying that, you know, Deion Sanders doesn't have a right to tell players that they're not going to get to play for Colorado. I mean, whatever, it is what it is. But, I mean, the fact that, you know, he took such exception to that article. And by the way, the one guy that he was going at back and forth with, one of them at least, was turned out to be an FCS All-American corner at Austin Peay. He's going to go to a UTEP now and be one of the best group of five defensive backs over the next couple of seasons. So, you know, it's not as if I don't know that Deion Sanders actually made the right call on all these decisions. So, you know, if nothing else, maybe him being so forceful about the guys who did leave and whatever, maybe that discourages players who are on his team now from leaving, right? Because maybe they see that and they're like, wow, I don't want to be on the receiving end of a hateful tweet from a coach who has 3 million followers, right? So maybe there was a little bit of strategy from his end on that.
Maybe.
But they wanted to be treated like professionals, and now, by golly, you're getting it.
Right, and that's only going to continue because this Supreme Court, not Supreme Court yet, obviously, but it's a lawsuit that's got to be settled, so it's not in the Supreme Court's hands, but it's an important lawsuit, the House versus NCAA. I mean, that's going to be another massive, massive straw that gets us one step closer to breaking the camel's back and the players becoming direct employees of the schools.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting for sure. But David, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon. Or excuse me, next week.
All right.
Good Lord.
Yep. No, well, hey, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You will talk to me tomorrow.
I'm going to talk to you when I talk to Johnny.
That's right.
Yep. All right, guys.
See you, David.
Appreciate it. Yep, thanks.
David Cobb joining us every single week to talk college football and college basketball, and plenty going on in both, with kind of both these spring transfer portals coinciding with each other. And so, man, I do not envy David when he has to cover both of these and be all on top of what's going on in the national scene for football, transfer portal, and basketball. So busy, busy guy. But let's go ahead and get to a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some baseball. It's a very busy weekend in Major League Baseball. So we'll talk that and more next on Sports Time.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Well, I feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone or something like that. You wake up this morning and the Cardinals are no doubt bad, and the Athletics might be good. The Athletics sitting only a game under 500 right now and playing fun baseball. I know they just got done with a series against the Marlins, which is another bad team out there. But Athletics have been surprising people this year. And on the other side, the Cardinals just continue to fall and fall more and more, deeper and deeper into the abyss that it feels like there's no coming out of this season.
They do, and I'm not going to direct it at Oliver Marmon.
Right.
He got handed
nothing.
Just, well, that first year he got handed, you know, kind of the goodbye tour, the final dance, and then last year just nothing, and this year not much better. A little bit better with Sonny Gray. A little bit better with some starting pitching. Relief pitching has been mostly pretty good, but it's just such a grind. To score the one game they won against the anemic, the woeful Southsiders, was 3-0, and that was just clawing that one out.
Yeah. 3-0 game
night.
That felt like a half run to nothing. I mean, it was.
It sure did.
It was terrifying.
It felt like an 8-0.
Yes. It felt.
Yeah. And that's a lot of the losses, a lot of the wins this year. I could make a, instead of going crazy and blowing it, like y'all were fearing that
still
I would,
time.
I can make the stronger case that Oliver Marmol is doing a great job and lucky to be 15-19 than I can eviscerating him.
You've been making that point for the longest, Brett.
That's fair.
I mean, you go through a lot of these wins and not many losses, but mostly of the wins, and at bat here, at bat there, and it changes. And the baseball is very, very nebulous. We know that. We know you can hit a 400-footer scorched and the center fielder not move an inch and catch it.
Yep.
And then you can hit a duck snort over in no man's land behind first base.
Yep.
Where Oregon State hit it against Arkansas, and where Mookie Bettis hit one Saturday night in his last at-bat that played it a couple against Atlanta after scalding a couple pitches earlier.
Yeah.
And you get a rally going. We know how fractious baseball can be.
No, absolutely. And that's baseball, Brett. I mean, that's how it goes. And
yeah,
so
it's
just been, it's been one of those seasons. And but you're right. I mean, this is nothing against this player at all. He's just not ready, but was forced to start Victor Scott in center field to start the season.
Opening day!
Yeah, and he's just absolutely not
ready.
Ran
out to the line opening day.
Yes.
What's he hitting in Memphis? Is he over 100?
I think
even
so.
Triple A.
I think he's been better in Triple A, but I mean, man, just... I mean, and it's nothing... Again, it's nothing against him. He just was not ready to be at the major leagues. He was in Double A last year and really, really struggled. He's hitting 186.
I'm surprised. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Is that high?
Yeah,
that's 100 points higher than in St. Louis.
It sure is. Which is wild. But yes,
what's Jordan Walker hitting here?
Well, that's a good question. I saw a highlight that they posted, the Redbirds posted the other day about him. He is batting 240 here in Memphis. has not.
That's about 100 higher than in St. Louis.
It is almost 100 higher than it was in St. Louis. Still hasn't hit a home run, though. So we're still sitting on zero home runs for Jordan Walker this season.
Yeah, you know, thought he was next phenom.
Sure. Just
everywhere you turn,
yeah.
The Cardinals have missed.
It's been a really, really bad season, and I don't see any.
Last year I checked out, what, about August 15th, I said, I can't watch another pitch.
Yeah, it was about August.
And football's getting here.
Uh-huh. That's kind of.
I hope I can make it to August.
Well, that's what I was about to say, Brett, because that's kind of the sweet spot where last year you were kind of, this is bad, but it's 1 year. We'll stick to it. And then August rolls around. You're just coming off media days, and you're like, okay, it's football season. Forget that. We're on the
football
season.
Football's on Thursday through Monday. Yeah.
This year feels different, and I think you'll be lucky to make it to August. I do.
And another thing to Oliver Marmol's credit, I think the division's a little better than I thought it would be.
Sure.
I don't know if it's gangbusters, but it's better.
It's certainly better. I mean, I think what the Cubs are doing this year, what the Brewers are doing this year, that series this weekend was a lot of fun, and both teams playing at a really high level. I think those two teams are good. I think the Pirates, while not, I don't think, a good team yet at all, they're better. They're making a step. They're taking steps in the right direction. Reds certainly
better
are,
than St. Louis.
Yes, 100%. And Reds are a fun team. They're, you know, taking hits now and then, but they're certainly a better team. It seems like every other team is improving. Maybe, like you said, not a, you know, the best division in baseball by any means, but it's better.
And here's a gigantic difference between Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Nobody in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are chest jersey popping mm-hmm. of being BFIB, of best fans in baseball. Mm-hmm. Good fans, but not a lot of them in either mm-hmm. place. And a few years ago, the Reds owner said, we would sell if anybody advice.
It's a great point, Brett. I mean, it really is. We're talking about two completely different, like, ideas of franchises.
I mean, the Cardinals exist in a world that they think they're in the championship flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Reds and the Pirates know they're starting Sunday and all the scores are even and they're in the sixth flight.
Yep. But they're both making steps in the right direction, and I think both have young teams.
Okay, that might have been editorializing.
It was really close. It was really close, Brett, but I think you're still good. But I think another thing about those three teams is...
But I'm not cracking on the fundamentals of the sport.
This isn't fandom. This is fandom, and that's okay. That's completely different.
This is fandom of brace yourselves. Yeah. It's going to be another long-haul, miserable year.
A life of a Cardinals fan, man.
Thank you, Johnny.
I know it, Johnny. It's tough out here.
Hey.
If you want cheap hotel rooms and cheap tickets, go in September.
Yeah.
hey, Brett, this is the life I chose.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know, Johnny. It's going to be rough.
It's going to be rough.
It's already a little bumpy road, man.
Yeah, bumpy might be an understatement. But I do think another thing, like the difference between the Reds, the Pirates, and the Cardinals, I think the Reds and the Pirates have a very like bright idea of what their future looks like. I think they have a lot of young prospects. The Reds, we're seeing them play right in front of our eyes. The Pirates, still a couple in the minor leagues, obviously Paul Skeens, but you know, some young guys with the majors that are playing well. I just don't know how much excitement there is in St. Louis around the Cardinals for the young guys that are either playing right now or that are coming up. It just doesn't have that same feeling as the Reds and the Pirates.
Five straight for the Phillies. They set atop the National League East. 686 baseball in the National League East. That's got the Braves in it, and it's got the big spending Mets in it.
Yeah, and they've been playing really well, and I think I saw earlier today at home they've won 9 in a row, and they're going right now at 5-1 over San Francisco, so it looks like another win you know, coming for them. So, yeah, they've been looking really good.
Minnesota finally lost.
Finally. So they'll go tonight against the Mariners in what should be an interesting series against two 19-win teams. That'll be a fun series start. There are some really good, and I feel like I say this a lot, but there are some really interesting series starting tonight.
Yeah, and you look at the A's, one under 500 only three back in the all-important loss column of first place Seattle.
That's right.
I know very early,
but
it looked like they were going to lose 125 games.
Yeah, and I mean, this roller coaster of last year, how historically bad they were for so long into the season, and then all of the off-field relocation. Will they, won't they move to Vegas? Where are they going to play? Now they're going to be the Sacramento A's and all of that. But these guys are coming
just
out.
A's.
Or just the Not, A's. Yeah, we don't even know. I mean,
like,
conflicting reports, I guess, on that.
Yeah.
But they, you know, this team's come out and they go out there and continue to play hard and one game under 500. I don't think I would have thought we'd be saying that on May 6th. And had a 20-run output Saturday against the Marlins.
What was that final? 20-4.
Yeah, I think some. Let's do a quick look. It was a blowout. It was 20-4. That's right. So Marlins got 7 hits while the A's got 21 hits.
Boy, just think, if you had the Marlins plus 15 and a half.
Oh, man. Unfortunately.
That'd be a tough L to take,
sure,
wouldn't it?
Sure would be. Rough life to win if that's the bets you're placing down on.
Yeah, you might need to rethink a lot of things.
I think so. But they're fun, though. I mean, if anybody's actually sat down and watched the A's this year, if you haven't, I'd tell you go watch them because they're kind of fun to watch. I've been enjoying watching them.
It's a very anonymous roster.
It is. And soon we'll be, I guess, moving to Sacramento, and who knows?
Playing anonymously there,
and just kind of a pit stop before going to Vegas. So, what a life it must be to be an Oakland A's baseball player. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, they've got a tough patch in front of them. Over the weekend, the Clippers are out.
Mm-hmm.
And I said the other day, what a lonely existence. Can you think of any separation of other teams around sports between the Boston Celtics and the Clippers? And they're out again, and they've tried it all.
They have. I mean, you brought that great number last week of like how much success they've had in recent history, and it just does not seem like it turns into postseason success. And now another early playoff exit, and I mean
they're kind of the opposite of the A's. The A's don't try.
They are. They try so hard, get all the stars, and can't really do anything. The A's are just out there having fun and somehow winning games.
Yeah, so, and don't care if anybody shows.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Well, and they've made life tough on the Lakers with what Ballmer can spend.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
The Lakers just don't have that money that he has.
No, I mean it's the stats you hear about Ballmer and how much money he has and how many other owners he could, you know, buy and like stuff like that. I mean, it's incredible to even think about how much money he has. And honestly, Brett, the biggest difference between two teams might be the other two teams in baseball, especially now that Shohei has gone to the Dodgers, the Dodgers and the Angels. I mean,
sure could be. What a lonely existence for the Angels.
It's bad. And then when your star player leaves and he doesn't leave.
Forgotten in a big city.
Oh, absolutely. And like, I mean, it'd be one thing if your star player left for Toronto that one
I just hit afternoon. The Google machine.
Okay. Oh, no.
Plus or minus $5 billion. Give me Steve Ballmer's net worth.
A plus?
No. Guess the number. I'll give you plus or minus $5 billion.
I was like, that's
no,
easy.
No.
I can't even guess. Johnny, floor's yours, man.
I say about $7 billion.
No way ever.
$52 billion.
See, I was gonna
dang,
guess like,
I was gonna
guess like 32.
I didn't
billion.
Give him enough.
I think it's like 32 billion, but then I started thinking that's way too high.
Man, that makes sense,
billion.
Especially when you think about all the other stuff he do, man. That makes sense.
That's crazy. I
don't
care.
He can
care
do anything
all
he wants to do.
Yeah, I don't care about all the other stuff he does. That's a ton of money. Like, that's insane. I can't even fathom that much money.
68 years old.
Good for him.
That
way to go, Steve.
That's great.
Good life.
Amazing life.
And still more life to live.
Went to Harvard and cashed it in, didn't he?
I guess so. I guess that's the purpose.
I'm reading
of,
his whole bio now.
Are
wow.
You? Wow. Yeah. How about that? Give us the biography when we come back.
Bachelor of Arts at Harvard.
Love that.
Occupation, businessman. Imagine
Love
that.
It. Imagine that.
Former CEO of Microsoft, co-founder of the Ballmer Group, owner of the Los Angeles Clippers.
Wow.
Spouse Connie, married 1990. Good work, Connie.
Shout out, Connie. How about that? Well, let's go ahead and get to
way
a break.
To go, Connie.
Way to go, Connie.
Boy, I bet you your dad loves having the son-in-law he's got.
I mean, who wouldn't? Who's this you brought home? Okay, yeah, that checks out. Let's get to a break, though. When we come back, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Be sure to follow us at Sports56WHBQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to watch live video of our shows, stay up to date with station events, and have chances to win prizes. Don't miss out on anything that's going on. Follow us at Sports56WHBQ. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, my big number today, I could have had a couple big numbers from this weekend. It was a fun weekend of sports with a lot of different numbers to choose from. But I have two big numbers. I punted. I was going to go with one big number, but now I have two big numbers because I just remembered another one that I wanted to bring to the table. So I have a basketball big number. I have a baseball big number. Johnny, which one would you like to hear first?
Let's go with baseball.
All right. Good choice. My big number to start us off today is the number 28. Yes, 28.
Ooh, very close to mine.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. All right. On Saturday, Brent Rooker hit two home runs in the same inning in the A's 20-4 win over the Marlins. Rooker, he's well known here in this area after attending ECS in high school and Mississippi State in college, so a fan favorite in this area. He's the 60th player in Major League Baseball history to homer twice in the same inning, and he's not the first A's to do it. Because the last A's player to do it was Mark McGwire against Seattle on September 22nd, 1996, 28 years ago. How about that? That's nice.
I like
it. Which you think, that what a phenomenal feat and how rare that is. Think about Fernando Tatis for the Cardinals in 1999 hitting two grand slams in the same inning off of the same pitcher.
That,
to leave him in there
that
long. That
is the biggest surprise of all of it, is that two grand slams, same inning, same pitcher. Because that never happens.
Just to be good enough to make the show.
Sure.
To be good enough to hit a home run in the show.
Uh-huh.
To be good enough to hit two in your life,
sure.
Much less two in a game, but do it twice in the inning.
Yes.
Like Rooker did. Phenomenal fit.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I got one more big number, and it comes from the NBA. We talk about how good Ant Edwards has been this playoffs.
Yeah, phenomenal.
He's really been fun to watch. And he looked really, really good against the Nuggets on Saturday. He broke 40 points for a second straight time. It's been back-to-back 40-plus point games. So my big number is the number 40. As it stands right now, only two players 22 years or younger have scored 40 or more in consecutive playoff games. Anthony Edwards did it in his last two games. The only other person to do it, Kobe Bryant. So how about that, Kobe Bryant, when he first hit the scene?
Incredible company.
Just incredible. Him and Kobe, I mean, what better company to be in
for a record? 22 years old for Anthony Edwards.
Uh-huh.
He does not turn 23 until August.
That's crazy.
Opening night next year, he will be 23.
That's crazy.
How old was he when they were here?
It's great
with Georgia
question.
That year.
I mean, was that
January of 2000? So he was 18.
Yeah, that's crazy. It
had just, 18 and
sure,
a half. Yeah,
sure. I mean, barely 18. That's crazy.
It really is. My big number is 24, and it's from baseball, and it's for Willie Mays, who celebrates his 93rd birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Baseball's greatest living player forever. Joe DiMaggio required you. At any introduction, if you had him in as a speaker, first thing he was worried about was the speaker's fee. The next thing, he made them have the introduction of Jolton Joe, the Yankee Clipper, and in the introduction, baseball's greatest living player.
Wow.
Well, that's Willie Mays now at 93, yeah. And he is the oldest member of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Crazy. Yeah, I did not know today was his birthday. Johnny Radio brought it up to me earlier today that it was his birthday. So a big happy birthday to him. What is today? August May 6th. So a good birthday to have. I found out a lot of people have May birthdays. I don't know
they
what
do.
It is about
It's very
May,
popular.
But a lot of people have May birthdays.
And for me with Willie Mays, Brian, one time we were down at one of the casinos right after they opened in Tunica. I'm going to say about 96 or 97. Mm-hmm. And he was a pitch man for one of them. So he was in town, and I told the crew that we went down for, I said, let me tell y'all something. It's not going to be any Joe Cool. I do this every day. It's Willie Mays.
Yeah, no, there's no holding back. It's Willie Mays. That's incredible.
And he was so nice
That's
to everyone.
Awesome. I love that. That's great. You know, they say never meet your heroes because they don't turn out, but I guess Willie Mays is not like that.
He did. I failed to mention last week that the golf TV announcer, Peter Oosterhuis, was on CBS Forever. He passed away last week, I didn't get a chance to mention. He was here forever covering our tournament, and when you're talking about, not talking about how nice Willie Mays was, Peter Oosterhuis, one time at the golf tournament, I was in the mornings here and getting ready to go on. It was early in the morning. He's out there, you know, early. On a Wednesday, Thursday morning, and I asked him, I said, hey, when I get through today, can I come in and tape you and we run it tomorrow? He goes, what time's your show live? I said, about 5 minutes. He goes, oh, I'll come out there and do it with you now.
Wow.
He started the show with us.
And he
passed away deep in the throes of dementia and neurological things. But I also wanted to make this point about it, and I want to be very sensitive. I'm sad over Peter Oosterhuis's his passing and the circumstances, and again, it was neurologically related. Brian, if it was a 76-year-old football player that passed away of something neurological, you know what the lead story would be?
It would be the confessions and CTE and stuff like that.
Tell me the time Peter Oosterhuis ever took one to the noggin on the golf course.
Hopefully never.
Why do we always jump to blaming football?
That is true, Brett,
right,
and
that.
You hear more and more, man. You hear more and more.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to study it. I think we need to be sensitive to it. I think we need to watch out for it. But let's quit trashing football.
Well, that's a good point, because it's not always football. And we just quick to jump on it.
And the real irony is in the ALS world, the worst neurological thing you can have, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Sure.
It's about a 55-45 percentile male to female ratio of getting Lou Gehrig's of ALS. When did the 45% females play football?
Never.
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 And every time it's a former NFL player that gets ALS, football did it to him. Football did it to him.
Yep.
I know there's problems, and I know we got to address them, but let's quit trashing football.
No, I'm absolutely with you on that, and I wish we would be able to do that, but unfortunately, I don't think it's easy for people to do that. It's very easy to just say, football did it. But let's go ahead and wrap up this hour and get to a break. And when we come back to start our third and final hour, DeMichael Cole, the Grizzlies beat writer over at the Commercial Appeal, he'll join us. We'll talk some Grizzlies. We'll also talk the NBA playoffs. That's next on Sports Time.